You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com. The comments and opinions of the guests on Dishin' and Swishin' are not necessarily the views and opinions of the host of the show or the contributors and management of hoopfeed.com. The Dishin' and Swishin' podcast is meant for entertainment purposes only, and the inclusion on the podcast of any individual, entity, or institution is not to be considered an endorsement of any kind.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel welcoming you to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast. And the Olympic Games are in the books, and we're getting ready for the start of a second half of a broken WNBA season. And we've gathered together a roundtable today to talk about what's going to happen in the second half of the year, maybe talk a little bit about the first half, and maybe even talk about the Olympics a few minutes. And I'm pleased to welcome my distinguished guests. First, Christy Winterscott. Hi, Christy. How are you?
Hi, Dave. How are you? Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Michelle Volpel. Hi, Michelle.
How you doing?
And Mel Greenberg. Hi, Mel.
Good evening. Hi there.
I appreciate you all taking a chance and taking some time out of your busy schedules, as I know all the teams and you're getting ready, which means you guys are getting ready for the second half as well. And let's start by touching base with where the first half ended and how we get ready for the start of the second half. And, you know, we're looking at a position right now. Let's start with the East a little bit. And the Connecticut Sun have opened up a good-sized lead in the East, and they're riding a win streak going in to the break. But, you know, there are four teams that are looking at playoff spots right now: Connecticut, Indiana, Atlanta, and then Chicago, with the Liberty and Mystics on the outside looking in, but the Liberty certainly within earshot. Now, the first team I want to mention and I want to talk about quickly is, you know, Michelle, Atlanta seems to have really an interesting schedule, and the addition of Erica DeSouza coming back. Plus, I wanted to get your opinion on the new attitude of Angel McCautry that she talked about during the Olympics, how much she learned and how much better she is now.
You know, I've always kind of thought that Angel might have that moment when things would click where she would sort of realize she can really be a very good leader on her team. And maybe the Olympics, you know, were that, if you will, protracted moment for her. Because watching her in the Olympics, I was just struck by, you know, she was, it was just an attitude. And you know, that her attitude was, seemed to be really all about team. And frankly, I can't say honestly that that's what you always saw out of Angel. And so if she's able to do that, I mean, she's obviously one of the best players, you know, in the whole world. There's no question about that. But to have that sort of attitude of really, really putting her team first, you know, if that's something she's going to have and embrace all the time, I can't see how that isn't a real positive for the Dream.
It's got to be a more of a reassurance for her, too, to have Erica back in that lineup, because now there's more people that she can trust to help get things done. One of the questions I always had was if Angel really trusted her teammates to come through.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, I mean, Christy's a former player, so I'd really love to hear, I mean, she played at the highest level, what she thinks about this, because I don't know if I'm being too harsh sometimes on Angel. I mean, I love watching her play. I think she's a, you know, one of the more interesting personalities. But there are times when it seems like she forgets, either forgets that there are the other people on the court, or as you said, David, she doesn't trust them enough. And that's something I felt like when you look at a great player like a Diana Taurasi. I feel like Taurasi, one of the things about her career is she empowers everybody else around her. You know, if you're a teammate, she empowers you, and that's something you'd like to see as Angel goes to the next several years of her career, because I don't even think we've seen Angel's best yet. I think it's coming, but that be something we see out of her is that real ability to empower her teammates.
Well, Christy, since Michelle threw it to you, please.
Right. I think with Angel McCautry, I've kind of compared her through the Olympic Games to LeBron James, and not necessarily the physical prowess, but the evolution mentally of both players. And you heard Coach K talking about how LeBron had become a leader for the team, a very vocal leader, coming in and doing the right things in a team way. And I think that both of them had to mature competitively to get to that point. So I really compare the two of them in terms of their maturation process. And I think it is a little bit of that trust factor as well, because Angel was coming off the bench. She wanted to have that role of providing that punch of energy, and I think she reveled in that and it really succeeded and helped the team, no question, in a couple of games get over the hump when they were down by 4 to Australia at halftime. You know, she came in and provided a punch there. And I just think that it comes down to maturity, but it also comes down to mental focus. And I can't say how important mental focus and confidence is. And I think both those players, LeBron and Angel, both lack some kind of confidence where their physical prowess has always been top level. But they have to believe it, and they have to believe that they can bring that every single night. So I think the mental aspect of a supreme player is at the top of the list when it comes to really producing high quality for their team. And both players, I think, did a fantastic job during the Olympic Games.
Hey, Mel, one question I have for you. You know, everybody talks about the players coming back and both the mental and physical fatigue factor potentially from the travel and the highs and lows and everything that went on with, you know, all the up and down with the Olympics. You know, Atlanta's got the one head coach that also went through all that and now has to come back to a WNBA season. You know, Marinelle Meadows not only has to get back to coaching her own team, she's also got to integrate Erica into the team. What kind of toll do you think does that have, and what kind of impact might that have on Atlanta coming out of the gate in the second half?
Oh, in the case, I've been writing about the other dynamic concerning the head coach, so I'll get to that at the end of the answer. For Marinelle, I don't think it's going to be all that much of a problem because she was with the level, you know. Basically, she was helping coach a WNBA All-Star game, which she would do normally on just the weekend. I know I talked to her in Washington and before the game, and she was talking about Erica and, you know, how she couldn't wait for her to get back and things like that. And, you know, when you look at where they are in the standings, it's not going to take much to retool and get it going. Might be a few bumps early, but, you know, let's look at the last couple of years, right? I mean, they were not the top seed in the playoffs when they started out. They had road disadvantages, no problem for them. I mean, they ended up getting to the finals twice. So, you know, readjusting and moving forward may take a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be all that much of a problem. Now, as I said, for the head coach, once he gets to campus, the only guy in the country that, you know, like any other person, if you just tomorrow outright gave him the UConn roster for next year, it's a major step up for them, and it's like Christmas morning. He's the only guy from what he just coached that will actually, and it's happened to other people in high-profile programs in the past coming back from stands, will actually have to take a bit to readjust himself because there's a longer learning curve, even with as great players as he has, in terms of what you're teaching than what you have with the Olympians. You know, Olympians, you show them something once or twice, that was it. But there'll probably be a lot of yelling and screaming in practice for about a week or so until he gets back in training.
Never mind the skill level. I just can't imagine going from dealing with the women to dealing with 18-year-old kids.
Well, that's the thing.
You know, that's a whole other dynamic. You know, Michelle, you know, a lot of teams are getting players back from being away internationally, but I'm wondering if perhaps in the Eastern Conference the biggest addition isn't in Chicago, where they're getting back Epiphany Prince, because they were an entirely different team when Prince was in there versus when she went down with her injury.
Yeah, Ruth Riley talked about that today during the WNBA teleconference, that the break, you know, obviously is a big help for them for that very reason, that that Pip would be able to get healthy and be able to come back. One thing I think they have to be concerned about is what kind of shape is Sylvia Fowles in? Because she obviously wasn't 100% during the Olympics. So, how will she be for the second half of this season? But you're right that having Prince back makes a huge difference with that team.
Yeah, and Chicago has one of the more difficult schedules coming up, where they actually have 10 road games, including that entire Western swing, and then they also have Connecticut twice. So that is certainly going to be something that is going to need to be taken a very close watch on. Now, Christy, Connecticut, of course, we were talking about, came out to a great start, and they're bringing back their two Olympians, and Asia Jones admitted today, very matter-of-factly, that she's tired. And they start right off on Thursday with New York in a game that's important to the Liberty. But the big difference on Connecticut this year, as well as Tina Charles has been playing, of course, being an MVP candidate, in my opinion, has been Kara Lawson, who has been
great.
In the best condition of her career, and is just playing with a confidence and an attitude that is pure leadership and has been pure gold for Connecticut.
No question about it. And I think her efficiency at running the point guard has been the key. They turn the ball over the lowest amount in the league, and I think that has paid dividends for them throughout the first half of the season anyway. But I think I spoke with her when she was in D.C. for a game, and I asked her if the vegan lifestyle, now that she's changed to, has anything to do with how well she's been playing, and she said, no, I could always shoot, so she's very confident. And I think that's such a great word for Kara, her entire career here locally at West Springfield High School. Confident young kid, just played with such moxie. And, you know, obviously at Tennessee played the same way. And now, you know, I think with her being a sixth player candidate, maybe did something to that confidence and drove her to play at a different level and to bring that spark back. And that's what competitive players need. They need that challenge. And I think that Kara Lawson has blown through that challenge this season and leading this team in a very strong manner. And, you know, she's averaging just under 15 points a game. But like I said, all of her numbers are up from last season. And, you know, just under 4 assists. I think with her leadership and having won a gold medal on the Olympic team, all of that bodes well for the entire team's confidence. Having a leader like that who knows how to get it done.
Yeah, Mel, you know, the other team that's fighting to try and catch up and get into the playoffs has been the Liberty. And they have been somewhat of an enigma all year. And you know, I had Monique Ambers on the show last week, and she talked about that they really need to improve their consistency. You know, what they tried to take the ball out of Cappy's hands, the ball handling responsibilities out of Cappy's hands. That didn't work. They let go of Kelly Miller, so Cappy will have it in her hands more again. But I think that they also, Plannette Pearson brings the attitude and swagger to that team, and her injuries really hurt that team, as did losing Kia Vaughn for some games at the end. But, you know, is this a team that can get that consistency together the way that it's made up? They seem to be trying to fit a little bit of a square peg into a round hole, trying to make the white line defense fit that personnel that they have.
Yeah, no, they have a ton of problems. I mean, it's the one thing Chicago has going for it right now, coming off of that slide they took with Epiphany, is New York. Because I don't know. I mean, they have to lose a lot. New York has to win a lot. And, you know, like a lot of the other teams, they were missing players that took the breaks, a la Jackson, a la Cambage. But the biggest missing piece, as we saw, may have been Quenitra Hollingsworth, because they just had post problems after post problems. And, you know, they didn't learn. I mean, you think of all the ways she impacted. Like I said, if they end up in the lotto and they end up the number one pick, she'll be the most valuable player of the season for the Liberty, because they didn't know she was coming back, or that she was not coming back until right before the draft. So now they panic, they run, they take Kelly Kane, who really hasn't given them much of anything, you know, the former Tennessee player who left before eligibility was up. You know, they struggled. They did miss Pearson, but, you know, you look back at their games, there were a ton of games that weren't even close. You know, I'm playing around trying to find those little games, those little 1 or 2 point games, and seeing where the total impact will be. And you can't even find too many of them on the Liberty. And then you got to, and then what's scary for them is Washington, as Christy would know, which has just stumbled around all season, came into New York on that last day of the season on that morning game and played like world beaters. So Kathy said there'll be changes. Well, we don't see any roster changes coming up. So it'll be interesting to see what the rest will do. I mean, having Pearson back will be a help, but, you know, they need, for all the things you talked about, they probably need some time for experimenting. They don't have a lot of time to experiment. I mean, this weekend, home and home, Connecticut, that's the way the season started. I don't even know if a split does them any good. I mean, they absolutely have to win on Thursday as a home game. But if they can't do that, and then let's say Chicago does something, they're going to have a playoff-wise, they're going to have a long road to hoe.
You know, after that home game with Connecticut, they play 5 straight on the road, then they play 6 straight on at home, then 3 more on the road, and then they end with Tulsa. So they have, I don't think I've ever seen a schedule put together like that with that type of streaks of road and home, you know, those types of breakdown of games. So they'll definitely be having some trouble coming out of the gate potentially with all those road games. Now there's 2 teams left in the East, Indiana and Washington. Michelle, for some reason, I think I'm best off talking about Indiana with you.
Yeah. Which is not to say, it's not like I don't ever have anything nice to say about the Mystics. It probably just seems that way. But yeah, let's talk. I'll talk about Indiana a little bit. I mean, this is a team that, you know, it seems like now for a couple of years, everybody's been wondering, okay, do they have what it takes? We know they're going to be a playoff team. They always seem to find a way to make it to the playoffs, but do they have what it takes to make a run? A couple years ago, obviously, they made it all the way. You know, they were a game within winning it all. I think, you know, in a lot of ways, I guess I'm thinking we're going to see the same kind of, you know, questions for the rest of the second half. You know, I think the Fever's going to be a playoff team, but do they have enough weapons, you know, to make a run at actually winning a championship? Do they have enough team speed? That's another thing that sometimes comes up. And I don't know. You know, right now I would say probably it's going to be a little bit of a disappointing end again for the Fever. I probably shouldn't say that in August, but I just don't know that this team's going to be able to make a real championship run.
It seems like a team that's put together very odd. The idea of Catchings at the 4 this year really, to me, needed Zelis to really step up and play some phenomenal ball. And she's been inconsistent still and is still playing the same way that she has the rest of her career. You know, good games and bad games.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put Catchings at the 4, in a lot of ways you're inhibiting what she does so well.
Yeah, I think you're right to a degree. I'm not sure at this point that I think they have to sort of go with that idea. You know, this is what we're going to do. I agree with you that the team is put together a little bit oddly. It is dependent on some people doing things that they haven't done consistently, or like you said, sort of taking people away from maybe the thing they do very best and having them do something that they're good at, but maybe isn't necessarily what they do very best. So I think, like I said, we're going to see the Fever in the postseason. We're going to see them, you know, challenge some teams. I just don't know that they have the pieces to do what obviously Catchings wants most of all. I mean, what's the one thing that she doesn't have in her career? She's got the MVP now. She still wants to get a WNBA title, and I don't know that can happen this year.
And I do think that potentially they could end up in third place behind Atlanta with the way that things are could break in Atlanta, which puts them, yeah, on the road in the playoff series, mm-hmm. and that's trouble. So I do think that you're right, that that's going to be a problem for them again come postseason time. Which brings us to Christy, and Christy, you know, hey, you're paid to talk nicely about the Mystics, so you can do that really easily here.
See? Well, you know,
let's focus on Crystal. Because Crystal Langhorne is the ultimate professional and trooper, mm-hmm. and she is still playing at such a high level.
She is, and it's really a delight to see. And you can tell a player like Crystal Langhorne, who remains pulled out any circumstance or situation, whether she has a bad ankle, she'll push through. And you can tell, I could see towards the end of the first half of the season that she was getting frustrated and some of the emotion was coming out with that. And I understand that. Being a competitive player, you want to win. And they've had so many close games where they were right there. And, you know, I just feel for them when the shot's going at the buzzer and there's nothing you can do about it. There's no time left on the clock. And, you know, you can just see all the air go out of her body. Just, you know, it's frustrating to see that because you know how hard she works and you know what her work ethic is like. So with a player like Crystal Langhorne, she wants the best for her team. And that's why she is as good as she is. But Washington has a tough road ahead of them. Their first two games coming back are on the road at Indiana and at Minnesota. So you look at those two games and, you know, they did have that great win to close out the first half against New York, up in New York, but they have a lot to prove in the second half, and they've had time because they did not have any Olympians on the team. So they've had time to get themselves together and put together that collective effort to make a push in the second half. And I'm not saying a playoff push, even though that may not be out of the question because we've seen stranger things happen, but they can make a push in terms of playing better at the end of games. And I think once they do that, then things will be much easier, not just for Crystal Langhorne, but for the entire team.
Is there a win at New York something that they can build off of, or is that just, okay, at least we ended the first half on a high note?
No, I think it was something that they were very proud about, the effort that they put forward. And they could have said, okay, we're going to have this long break. Let's just go up here and play this game, go through the motions. No, they went up there with a purpose, and they intended to win that game, and they wanted to make that mark, and they were counting on New York maybe not coming in as focused, and it's just Washington coming in, you know, even though they're just two games behind. But with that being said, I think winning does a lot for your confidence. And I think the way Washington won that game, they were making the extra pass. They were giving up a good shot for a great shot. They were rebounding well. And I think when they play that way, they prove to themselves that they're capable of being that successful. And it's just a matter of making it a consistent effort. And I think that will come. And, you know, getting all the pieces together in terms of, you know, the chemistry issues, making good passes, because the turnovers have been the key issue for Washington all season long. They crash the boards awfully hard. They get second-chance opportunities, but when it comes time to close the game, they've had issues with that, and in New York, they did not.
And I'm going to just, real quick, I want to throw in some props for Michelle Snow, because she has really been playing very hard and doing a nice job on the boards in the games that I've seen. It was good. It's good to see her, you know, coming, putting a little bit of a resurgence on her career.
Yeah, it is. Now, and Michelle, she's very good, and she understands that they need her to do that.
Now, heading out west, yeah, that's where all the teams with the winning records are residing, other than Connecticut and Indiana. And Mel, you know, what people aren't noticing, though, is while the Minnesota Lynx are sitting there on top of the West, yeah, their record is 15-4, and in that last 10, they were 6-4. They started to get a little bit banged up there, and so I think the break probably helped them quite a bit, wouldn't you say? Some of the players like Taj and Brunson and the others that were starting to feel it a little bit?
Yeah, and I would say, you know, when you had the factor coming back and you never know what you're going to get, but, you know, that Minnesota trio was, Lindsay's been around the block a bit now, but still, that was a kiddie core compared to the rest of the team. Although actually, you almost forget how long Simone's been around. But what I'm saying is to them, I think it was an invigoration playing in that environment, which was not all that much a change the way they did things last year. So I think, you know, in coming back, they're going to be, you get that reacclimation situation mentally, but I think they're going to be hot to get things going, you know, especially with Cheryl Reeve coaching them. And, but it's going to be real interesting because those top those three teams, people kind of forget because we keep talking about Minnesota because of last year, but those three teams are very, very close together in the standings. You got Kansas coming back, so that's going to be a very interesting race. And then, you know, in that group, and even though Seattle's back a bit now that they got Jackson, I don't know that Seattle can catch the others unless they're all beating each other, but it's going to be real, real, real interesting.
One of the problems I see for Seattle is that they're starting the second half. Waters isn't playing yet. Thompson isn't playing yet. Jackson's going to miss the first couple of games still. So they're actually starting the second half still undermanned, even though you would have thought that that was a team that really needed the benefit of the break with the age and some of their players. That's something that I think could be a potential problem for them coming out of the box.
Yeah, but they got to – the other side of it is if it's going to take a bit, they got a cushion to survive it because they're five games in front of the bottom two teams. And consider that Phoenix right now is looking for local advertising and from hospitals because that's where all their players are for the
and
most
the
part.
Mayor.
I mean, and the mayor.
Yeah.
They went from – they went from winning, losing by a nose to a broken nose in one little fun event. So, but I mean the upside to get Diana back, but they're not going to get Candace back for a bit. Yeah, Dupree and then Houston went out. So, it'll be from the Seattle side, and they play each other right off the bat. You know, I think Thursday night. So. From the Seattle side, they can take a few hits as long as they get things right. But I don't know that Phoenix has all that much to come up with the thrust that will be needed to get past Seattle.
Well, Michelle, I'll ask what you think. Is Diana Taurasi coming back?
Gosh. I mean, she certainly looked like she can play, right? I mean, so she needs some time off. I think we probably all know that. I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for her to take some more time off, I don't think. But yeah, I do think she'll come back. But like Mel said, that's a lot of ground for them to make up, even if she comes back. I think Seattle is going to be reinvigorated. Tulsa is, you know, probably going to win a few more games, but they're realistically out of the picture. And really, you know, Phoenix isn't, what are they, one game? They've won one more game than Tulsa. So,
yep.
this has been going on. A lot of people have been talking about this, and it makes me, it's almost uncomfortable to talk about, but this idea of what is it, quit for Britt? Isn't that the nickname that people have been talking about? Kind of like the, something for luck, you know,
right.
If we don't really play well, you know, what are our chances, in the lottery? I don't think as a franchise you can ever think like that. I think it's almost like, I don't think that's the way you should think. And you certainly shouldn't think that way in terms of the people who are, you know, ticket buyers, you know, this season, you know, who expect to go see a good product. But by the same token, you know, is Phoenix, you know, do they have a legitimate chance to do very much this season? So I don't know. It's a tough thing, and ultimately it may come down to, you know, Diana's deciding what she thinks best for herself, you know, based on how she feels.
You know, having talked to Corey last week also, he was also on the show, he didn't give me a warm, fuzzy feeling that she was coming back. I mean, she was playing, and he was saying how he thought that she missed all these shots and still wasn't playing, wasn't 100%, and that he didn't think that she was really healthy and that they would talk when she came back. I just got a feeling that she may come back at the start and play a couple of games to get the rub off the Olympics, but I got a feeling that she's going to be shut down at some point. It's just a gut feeling that I have. And I agree that it's an uncomfortable situation to talk about, but yeah, you're right that she needs the time off. And at some point, I think that you can, you're going to have to say, do you want her to sit out an entire season, or do you just let her sit out now when you have no chance of going anywhere, even if you were to make the playoffs without Taylor and with a fairly injured Dupree in Houston, even if they come back. So I'm just not sure about that. It is tough, so we'll move off of it and we'll continue. And, Christy, let's talk about Dan Hughes and the team that is the hottest team in the league, having won 9 games in a row ending the half. And the San Antonio Silverstars started out the season 2-4, and now they're 13-5. So
right.
this is quite a hot team.
It is, and I think that, you know, we were talking about confidence, and winning definitely has been a great thing for San Antonio after that slow start. But, you know, Sophia Young is just an incredible player, and I know she's the best on his radar, and I know that she's been named to the All-Star team, but you don't call out her name if you talk about the top 5 or 6 players or the top 10 players in the league. You don't really hear her name called, but she has done spectacular things for Dan Hughes and San Antonio at her consistent play. She reminds me a lot of Crystal Langhorne in terms of that. She's going to give you her best effort night in and night out. But Becky Hammon has just done a tremendous job. I think that her leadership and having been there, done that also, and been a winner, I think that has helped this team. And you can just hear her really demanding. It's very impressive to watch them continue good things. But 9 straight games to close the first half, that's awesome. And I know that Dan Hughes is proud of that, and he wants that to continue. And this could be the dark horse as the playoffs get closer and closer for us.
You know, and then, of course, the sleeping giant that everybody is waiting to hate. As Michelle put it, the start of the season, when we had our first conference, our first round table, Michelle said maybe LA would step up and be the team that we hate this year. the Sparks are right there. They're playing strong. Candace comes off playing well at the end of the Olympics. You know, and the Sparks, a lot of people say that they're the team that's going to come out of the West. You know, Mel, what do you think about the veterans on the Sparks and that unbelievable rookie?
Well, they, of course, part of an unbelievableness as a rookie was there wasn't a lot to compete. I'm talking about other rookies in this particular year. But, they could, but there were nights. I remember they took a little slide in the middle of everything, too, before they started turning it around again right near the end. So, I mean, it'll be real – that threesome will be real interesting, and the other team we're about to talk about, I was just looking about who impacts who the rest of the way. There's one thing, we don't address it, but we keep referring to schedule, and when it starts out, we start looking at some imperfections just on what certain teams have to do, and then you keep getting the answers from Park Avenue or wherever the home office is up there in New York. Well, it'll all even out. It evens out after the Olympics. No, it doesn't even out. There are people that are going to have to play Seattle with Jackson, where others played Seattle without Jackson, like particularly the East-West matchups. Schedule will be interesting. And Tulsa's got 4 games with San Antonio. And that's the most that anybody in the West is going to play San Antonio. So if Cam Dage is a factor, we'll see what happens. I think the way they ended, they would have liked to keep on going. You know, sometimes you never know. For some teams, a break might be too much of a break to cool things off. But as far as their side. But L.A., I think Candace is going to come back. You know, a little more leadership. Ogumike has been great. It'll be a real interesting run. I mean, in the end, Minnesota might have we'll see. We'll have to watch and see how those two finish out regular season with each other, because maybe we can find a sign from there. But it's going to be a heck of a playoff series in the West, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, in LA, it, depending on how things go when they start getting out to the end of the season with the jockeying for seedings, L.A. does end with a – the good news is it's a homestand. The bad news is that it's Chicago, Connecticut, Phoenix, and Minnesota. So that's not going to be the easiest of homestands when they get down to the end. So that's something to keep an eye on. Michelle, you're the Midwesterner, so let's talk about the Tulsa Shock and the most fun and enjoyable 3-15 I've seen in a long time.
They are they play hard. They play with I feel like a little bit more sensible system this year. I mean, you can see that some of the things that Gary's doing there are I think could work. When exactly is Liz Cambage going to be coming back? You know, what's going to be her we saw her be brilliant in one half and then essentially disappear. And I will give Asia Jones and Tina Charles a lot of credit for helping her disappear. But the thing about Liz is Liz Cambage is it seems to me like she can – you can sort of – it's both the defense pushing her out and her natural tendency to drift. She drifts away from the basket as games go on, especially the tougher it gets inside, and that's something she's going to have to fight through. And she did it in that first half against USA. She looked like the superstar that we all think she could be. If Liz comes back, when she – I assume she is coming back – but when she comes back, I think that's going to be great for that team. I think community's really eager to see her. But, you know, Mel's right. They do have some schedule challenges they have to face. And if we go back up for a second with San Antonio, because I'm going to be going down to Tulsa this week to see them, one of the things I think that's really stood out with San Antonio is just how reliable their bench has been in terms of not letting the play drop off at all. And a player like that, maybe like, you know, the gold star player for that, or should I say the silver star player for that for San Antonio is Gia Perkins. I mean, and that's a player who I feel like has been so good about saying, hey, I don't care starting, I don't care coming off the bench, I don't care how many minutes when I'm out there, I'll do whatever you need me to. And I think that's been a big factor. That San Antonio team just has really great chemistry, and you have to give a lot of credit to Becky Hammon and Sophia Young, the two best players, for being those type of players that just help that chemistry so much.
I do think that team may be the deepest in terms of rotation of anybody in the league. The way that, you know, they can go almost 10 deep. You know, the posts may be a little bit of a problem at times, but, you know, you have Kristen and Shanice Johnson, and, you know, you even got Tully sitting there at the end of the bench, and, you know, maybe Tan Smith if she gets healthy. So it's got that nice mix. You're absolutely right about that. And that's a team that is definitely going to be somebody to consider for really messing up everybody's plans for a Minnesota-LA possible final.
Absolutely. And Dan Hughes said right before the break that he is hopeful that Tangela Smith will be able to come back. You know, she had started to practice. She certainly wasn't going 100% with the team, but she had started to practice before the break. So that's another team, San Antonio, that I think may have benefited from the break to give her some time to get healthier, because she is such a veteran in the clutch. I mean, she's been in the league for so long. She's a good player. If they can, you know, they're not going to need her for a lot of minutes, but if they can at least rotate her in, you know, in crunch time against some of the teams that have some better post players, that she's able to do what she does so well, because she is also somebody who draws players out. You know, she's very, very comfortable far away from the basket. If they can get a few minutes out of her every game, I think that's a big help to San Antonio.
Okay, we've covered each of the teams, so let's touch base on a few other things going around. You know, in some of these I'll ask individual people for comments, but otherwise just feel free to contribute any way you want. The Olympics, 10 million people, they say, watched it. I'm not seeing any increase in advertising out of the WNBA trying to get a rub off of this, other than individual teams saying, sending out press releases saying, come see our team, our Olympians, but nothing else really big or really big push. Am I wrong, or is somebody missing the boat on this?
I think, let me chime in, I think the thing about the league, as much as things are going, is we just don't know where they are in budgets. Because certainly, and Michelle's been around, you know, to see it. Actually, Christie's been around to see it too. In previous Olympics, they have come off. And they have, you know, when the Olympics were over, they have come out and they've made those big pushes. So the first thing might be that you are seeing what you're seeing, but we got to, in some ways, I don't want to say throw them a bone or not, because shame on them if the NBA isn't helping out in this. But the question is, where are they with their budgetary situation to do that? But, you know, you would certainly think that you know, see, they don't have an NBA season at the moment like they do during the playoffs to come out and do stuff on TV. So, of course, again, you always go back to Michelle's employer. You would think that maybe they would pick them up by the bootstraps a little bit. They certainly have a lot of games on TV to come. So it's an interesting question. But, yeah, it is noticeable that you really didn't see what you thought you would normally see. Given all that.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I think there's an interesting dynamic that goes on in that ESPN does not televise the Olympics. And, this is NBC's baby. It's NBC's baby for the foreseeable future, which is not to say ESPN downplays the Olympics, but when you consider the hype that ESPN gives to all of its properties that it does have, comparatively speaking, it doesn't do quite that same thing with the Olympics. And so I also wonder how that plays into all this. But it is sort of disappointing to think that you have all these eyes. I wasn't really thrilled with the broadcasting crews that they had for women's basketball at the Olympics in terms of plugging the WNBA. I felt like there wasn't enough talk, you know, during the games and certainly during those U.S. games. You know, we're hearing about Diana Taurasi's recruitment to UConn, which was like 1999. You know, it's like, why not talk about the WNBA? I felt like there wasn't enough talk about the WNBA, and Ann Myers is, you know, in perfect position to talk about the WNBA. I just felt like there wasn't enough talk about that and looking forward to the second half of the season by the broadcasters, and certainly not by the play-by-play guy, because I felt like, you know, he had nothing really to say about the WNBA.
Well, some people lose sight, too. Let's remember Ann Myers isn't talking about Diana as much because of the UConn factor as much as that override. She's talking because she's still an executive on the Phoenix Mercury, and it's her player, so there might be as much of that fed into that.
Yeah, but that's all the more, that goes back also into what Michelle was saying, though, Mel, that she has, a real vested interest in pushing the WNBA. I mean, as a person that's here in Connecticut, you know, and I, of course, I've heard everything about, you know, Gino this, Gino that, and all the comments about the lineups and everything else and all the criticisms. I started to get uncomfortable with the amount of talking about the, you know, UConn, six players, their recruitment, all these championships they won. You know, Michelle's right. These ladies have been out of school for a long time at this point. Even Asia Jones commented in her press conference today that it was kind of nice to see some of these people. It's been so long since I've been out of UConn.
I saw that. You know what, too? Other than Annie, you know, you're looking at who's broadcasting and going in. There was all that, all the business about half the roster's UConn. So I think sometimes you're around these guys a lot more than I am, Michelle, but I think them not all being regular women's basketball broadcasters, they just took the easy way. You know, maybe they didn't do a lot of homework. I think some of them were doubling up on the men, too. You know,
they were.
Yeah,
so absolutely.
I think that's
frustrating for me to see, and it's and to hear, to listen to, because there's storylines about this. Isn't like they're talking about, I mean, we're in the middle of the WNBA season, and so storylines about what we've seen so far in the season, and like I said, there's plenty of time to talk about it, because in some of those USA games,
right.
I mean, they were the last, you know, half of the game for several of the games. There, you know, there wasn't a lot necessarily to talk about with what we were seeing, but to incorporate more of what's currently going on, what to look forward to. But again, NBC doesn't broadcast the WNBA. I mean, I feel like it'd been a lot different story if NBC had a WNBA contract. They were doing a lot of games. You would have seen sort of constant promotion about, okay, and, you know, and we'll be broadcasting this game, you know, and this is what to look forward to. And of course, the playoffs are, and we don't see any of that because that's not one of their properties. We see, you know, right, whatever thing, Animal Planet or Animal Hospital or all that stuff. And anything else that they're doing, we see plugged because that's what the Olympics is for NBC. It's a giant commercial. So that hurts the league, that the league, you know, has no connection with NBC.
But did you know that Layla falls asleep in the third quarter? Could they have said that any more times?
there was an element, and I am generally, I don't like announcer bashing because I know it's a tough job. I don't do it. I would be terrible at it. It's not that, but I just feel like this was, you know, the broadcasting. If you listen to some of the other sports, for instance, Hope Solo went after Brandi Chastain, right, which was ridiculous because Brandi Chastain did a really good job. I thought she did an excellent job in soccer. I thought, you know, their volleyball broadcasters were very good. They're very knowledgeable. They told you a lot about the players. They told you a lot about what you were looking at. Admittedly, for the most part, they tended to have a little bit better games sometimes to broadcast. But it really bothered me that I felt like we were not getting the kind of commentary that there are broadcasters out there, and Christy's one of them, who are really follow this sport and really know what's going on in the WNBA season. And again, that just disappoints me because it would be a chance to get some of your viewers up to speed, you know, and get them excited. But NBC has no vested interest in doing that.
Christy, you do know how difficult it is to do the broadcasting, you know, doing that. And you do such a great job. And this isn't going to come out right, but you've done a lot of blowout games as well. So
right,
you know about filling that time. I do think Michelle's right. It doesn't look like that the announcers were really, you know, Ann Meyer certainly knows plenty, but they didn't really seem to be up on what's going on in the current season for the nine key players of the WNBA and really promoting it.
Right, and it is, you know, when you have games that, you know, are blowout games, you do have to have that kind of information. But I thought that Ann did a tremendous job of providing a lot of history, and I was really wowed by that. But I think that, you know, in order to continue to grow the game, you don't only have to look back, but you've got to look forward also. And that was a prime opportunity that I think, I know it was mentioned that, you know, some players played in the WNBA, you know, on the French team and, you know, had a cup of coffee here and there in the league and all this. And Demerick doesn't want to come over because she makes so much money in France. So things were mentioned about the league, but in terms of looking forward to the second half of this season, this year, and really pressing and advertising that and having that platform and having the 10 million viewers, I think that opportunity was missed. And, you know, it's up to all of us, I think, to continue to peck like the beak of a duck and like just be persistent and annoying and continue the audience that's there, because I know at the 96 Olympics, there was a commercial on every two or three commercials talking about We've Got Next. And that, I mean, people still know about that because it ran so many times. And I think there has to be more commercialism of the media. I think there needs to be more. I think we need to do a better job of saying more things about, you know, the next game and the players coming into the league from college next year, like Brittany Griner, Skylar Diggins, Elena Deladon. These players need to be talked about.
Hey, Christy, we're having a hard time. You're cutting out, Tom.
Just to get people, can you hear me better now? Sorry.
That's okay. It's just come and gone
okay
a couple times.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I'm just saying, just in the future of the game, I think, is the most important thing. And, you know, you've got to not only look, you know, the history of the game, obviously winning 41 Olympic Games is amazing, but there are players in the pipeline, you know, that are going to make the game even more spectacular, but that needs to be mentioned also. And, you know, the upcoming second half of the WNBA season, you know, needed to be pushed a little bit more. But I think the opportunity is still there for advertisers to pick up. I know that there were players on McDonald's commercials. There were players that, you know, picked up endorsements. So, yes, NBC and ESPN have that kind of responsibility, and there may be a conflict of interest, if you will, with that, with both entities. But at the same time, I think that other advertisers need to step up, like sponsors of the league. Put Candace Parker, you know, on something, you know, on a McDonald's commercial. Put, you know, Tamika Catchings on a commercial, and put them out there and really capitalize on the success of women's basketball winning 5 straight gold medals.
Well, let's hope that they do something. I will say, Michelle, that it was unfortunate that you couldn't get over there, that you couldn't go over there and cover and help as great a job as Doug Feinberg did. It would have been nice to have somebody that knew the game over there as well, instead of people picking up other beats. So, now, LeBron James, MVP, Finals MVP, NBA champion, gold medalist. Who's going to join him, if anybody? Tina Charles, Candace Parker, Sue Bird, Sylvia Fowles, all of them have chances for that to possibly happen. What do you think, Michelle?
You're saying for this season? Is that what you...
Yep, for this year. Do the same thing.
Oh, to win...
MVP, Finals MVP, champion of the league, and gold medalist.
Yeah.
They've all got one.
Yeah. Which WNBA player? Man, you put me on the spot. You know, I don't know. I think partly because I don't have a feeling right now for sure of who we're going to see in the finals. I guess part of me might, you know, lean a little bit towards, you know, that we're going to see Connecticut, but I'm so unsure about the West. And I wouldn't have said that, you know, like what, 2 or 3 weeks into the season, it looked like it was just cruise control again for, you know, for the Lynx, but I'm not so sure that's the case now. It certainly was, or at least it felt like things had gotten so much tighter before the season break. So I don't know that I have a good answer to that one.
Well, Christy, anybody want to think that that's a possibility?
Oh, well, not an easy one.
I would say mathematically it's a possibility. Whether it's be a reality is another question. The two best people that probably have the best shot, you know, looking at where we left off, are Parker out west and Charles. Mm-hmm. But their teams have to win. And, you know, I don't know, question, especially in WNBA, great as you are, whether you can single-handedly carry a team across the finish line without some help. So as good as Tina is, we didn't really talk a lot about Connecticut in the East. You know, you started it out there, and part of it because of the lead. But, you know, one thing Connecticut has right now, and again, back to that schedule imbalance, is they have already played most of their conference schedule. They have a huge bank account. It's like they don't have a cushion. They have a mattress in terms of their conference record if they have to get into tiebreakers. So so that's why, you know, you could feel that Connecticut might come out. But then you never know who's going to get hot. And Atlanta wasn't really Atlanta. You know, and we see what they can do. But, you know, mathematically, the two potentials are Charles or Candace. But I don't know, you know, you couldn't bet the house that it's going to happen for either of them.
Well, I would say with those two being up for nomination, I would say Candace Parker, just because of her experience, and if she can stay healthy for the remainder of the season, I think that she has a good chance of doing that. You know, I've seen Los Angeles play inconsistently, but at the same time, Candace, the way that she played in the gold medal game, I thought that was outstanding with the double-double, 21 and 11. But I think that the confidence that she got from that, being able to do that and coming back to L.A. where they were playing great basketball, I think that will maybe push her over the edge in terms of remaining healthy and getting the MVP, the finals MVP, and possibly the championship.
Well, the only problem in L.A., and you talk about somebody who might be most improved than what they had, of course, in terms of any kind of turnovers, you know, with USA during the Olympics, obviously a ton of that was due to the short practice schedule. But, you know, with Tolliver, I mean, you don't know if they're going to go all the way or they're going to get a tax write-off for
right,
all the
right.
giveaways that he was giving up for charity, you know, and especially during that losing streak. So, you know, it remains to be seen. Like I said, it's that question of if Tolliver, if they don't make as many turnovers, then, yeah, it could be real, real interesting now on the L.A. side.
Right.
Okay. Also looking in your crystal balls, only twice before in the history of the WNBA has somebody averaged 20 points a game and 10 rebounds a game. And we'll discount Candace Parker doing it over 10 games in 2010. Sylvia Fowles did it last year, and Shamiqua Holtzclaw did it in 2003. Right now, Candace is at 19 points and 10.2 rebounds. Tina's at 18.7 and 11.3, and Syl is at 18.5 and 12.4. Mm-hmm. Are we going to see any or all three average 20 and 10 this year?
Wow. I mean, Candace is the closest. I mean, if you're speaking numerically, but I think with Fowles being injured, I don't know if that can happen during the second half, at least not the beginning of the second half. But, wow, those are huge numbers. I'm going to stick with Parker.
I'll say Parker, too.
Well, definitely Parker, but I think Tina can do it, too. I mean, I think Tina probably picked up a lot to her game just, you know, being one of the youngsters and playing in that company. And, I mean, we saw the stats that she's been piling on ever since her rookie season, right? This is only her third season, isn't it? And, you look at the numbers there. So I wouldn't discount Charles from doing it either.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that Tina Charles might actually have a better second half than she did first half. I think that she got a lot of confidence playing in the Olympics, even more confidence, so we shall see. Of the four teams on the outside looking in, do any of them have a chance of sneaking into the playoffs?
Not, you know what? The way it's worked out and what they're dealing with, I don't see it because how far behind they are. The interesting thing is New York is kind of a quicksand when you start doing the standings in reverse. At the break, they were a little bit better than the worst that are all within a game and a half of each other, especially if you're looking at the Sherman Tank Division, as I nicknamed it. On the other hand, they just haven't been good enough to make a run toward the playoff side. And like you say, off of that start, I think they're going to struggle more. In fact, it would not be shocking, because I think Cambridge is going to give Tulsa some wins. And I think, Phoenix is there. Washington still has, I think, three games left of New York. So Washington plays like they did. So, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise that New York would be more likely to get worse rather than get better. You know, the problem is who's going to fall from the group that's there? Like I say, Seattle probably should be okay. The only really threat you see is if Chicago goes on a bit of a slide, but even if they go on a slide, they're going to have to go on a very big slide, and New York's going to have to go on a very big surge. And Chicago might slide, but New York might continue to slide with them, so they'll stay in sync.
Anybody
yeah,
else?
They might be racing each other down that slide, right? Right, Mel?
Yeah.
No, I actually think I think Mel's right that I think the West is set. That probably doesn't. I mean, mathematically, it's going to be really tough for Phoenix. It would, you know, it really, you know, it has Seattle's is really realistically the only team that they're going to catch unless there's just something catastrophic with some other team. I just don't see that. And then with Prince back, you know, and if Fowles can at least be whatever percentage she can be for the rest of the rest of the season, you think this is finally going to be your Chicago makes the postseason. I don't know how long they'll last once they're there, but no, I think those four that are on the outs are going to stay on the outs.
And I think New York may have a chance just right there just because of Sylvia Fowles' health and just being, two and a half games behind Chicago. I think they may slip into that last spot in the East. But, I'm from Washington. I work for the Mystics. I can't count them out 100%, but it remains to be seen, obviously, and there are a lot of games to be played.
Okay, now, we know about Lauren Jackson. We'll take her out of the equation. Who's going to have the biggest impact of players that are returning for the second half of the season? Any ideas?
You're talking about people that weren't there and are now coming into the fray?
Yeah, injuries too.
Yeah, that too. I think you look at, what Canva showed, she could possibly have a really big impact because if she impacts Tulsa and Tulsa wins games, I mean, she'll be impacting all kinds of things on and off the court. But in her case, it's not so much she'll impact Tulsa making this great, giant, Old Faithful gush forward. Tulsa will get better, but she will impact in terms of teams that they beat in terms of where they are. I mean, if Tulsa suddenly starts making trouble for those three leaders by taking a couple games. They don't play as many, like I say. They got four, like I said, San Antonio. Let's say they were suddenly to win three or four because of Cambridge. Now they don't get near the playoffs, but they're certainly she's certainly impacting what's happening in the West. D'Souza will be a bit of an impact, maybe a little more. With Atlanta, because now they can kind of get all the pieces together. So I think that'll be a key. If Pearson, starts to play, that's a possibility. I mean, if you're looking at the three that didn't play, that were away on other teams, I think those are most of them. Aren't they in the foreign brigade? I mean, because Becky was here, but I think we got them all. Those are, either injury or whatever. I mean, you could say Diana, if she plays, will have some impact. But I don't know that's the problem. You got players that impact on their individual performance, and then you got players that impact because they suddenly get their teams winning and disrupting other teams. So you really got a two-part dynamic.
Yeah, I would agree with those, and I do think Erica is going to have, is going to help the Dream, and I think unlike if Taurasi comes back, will she help Phoenix? Yeah, is it going to make a big difference in how this season ends? Probably not, but I do think Erica definitely could be a big impact player because she's been so important to Atlanta, and I do think I think it makes everybody on that team more comfortable. It certainly her rebounding ability, just her size, her ability to play defense. I think she could potentially be one of the bigger impacts of people coming back because the Dream could be poised to really go on a nice run here, and really get it together in the second half of the season, and she could be a big part of that.
I agree with that. I think D'Souza, I think she will be that missing piece for them. They've missed that rebounding piece like Michelle just spoke about. And I think defensively also, I think she changes a lot of things in the paint when she's there. So I think that could be the missing piece for that push in the playoffs.
Well, guys, since I'm about to lose power in my cell phone, I think this is the perfect time to wrap things up for tonight because I also promised you we wouldn't go too long today, and we already have. As we always do. Michelle, Christy, Mel, I want to thank you all for your time tonight, and let's enjoy, hopefully, a great second half of the season.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, thank you.
Good luck.
It'll be fun.
Good luck to everybody on your various beats and coverages.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.